turn to Romans chapter 1. Remember last week we were looking at 1:18 and we called it the revelation of God's wrath. Well, now we're going to go on from there in verse 19 through 23 to see the reason for God's wrath. Why does God reveal his wrath? Can't he just say, oh, heck, I'll forget all this? That's not the way it works, and we'll see that in today's class. So remember, we're tuning in or coming down in the outline to make it more specific. We're expanding the outline. We started with the doctrinal section. This is the big picture of the first section of the outline, and that's chapters 1 through 8. That begins with the justification of the sinner, 1:1 through 5:11. And that breaks down into Paul's introduction in 1:1 through 17. And that has three parts in it. Paul's personal greeting in 1:1 through 7. Paul's personal purpose in 1:8 through 15, and Paul's three I ams in 14 through 17, or you can call this the theme of the book of Romans. This is the theme of the book of Romans. So now we'll start on the revelation of the sin of man in 1:18 through 3:20. And that'll come in three parts. First, it'll be the sin of the pagan man in 1:18 through 23. So the wrath of God is revealed in 1:18, and that's where we left off last week. And now the new sections of this outline will be the reason for God's wrath in 1:19 through 32, the natural revelation of God, which is creation, 1:19 through 20, and man's response to that in 1:21 through 23. And of course, then we'll finish off with the sanctification of the saint. So we'll see, first we save somebody, and then he has to be sanctified as well. That's living the Christian life, of course. The natural revelation of God is in 1:19 through 32. But we'll start out with 1:19 and 20, which is the natural revelation of God. So we noted last time, of course, that the basic sin of man is to take God's revelation in whatever form it is in. God reveals himself in different ways, and man holds it down or suppresses it. So in this section, we'll be looking at God's natural revelation, which is creation. And some call that general revelation. The word because in verse 19, because that which is known about God, is the word diote. And diote is a marker used to indicate why something just stated can be reasonably considered as valid. So why is God's wrath revealed? Because, and that's diote, that which is known about God is evident within them, for God made it evident to them. In verse 19, Paul makes it very clear that pagan man possesses revelation. And this is a man who doesn't have a Bible. He's not moral, but he possesses revelation. 1:19 says, because that which is known about God is evident within them, for God made it evident to them. So no one will be able to stand before God at the great white throne judgment and say, "Well, gosh, I never knew." Because God made it evident by his creation. So everyone possesses revelation to some degree, not always to the same degree. When it says that which is known about God, known is the word gnostos, and gnostos always refers to real knowledge. So man possesses real knowledge about God. The word evident is phaneros, and phaneros means to being evident so as to be readily known. So someone could say now, okay, I see this, but I didn't understand. Look down at verse 20, where it says, "For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood through what has been made, so that they are without excuse." So we have to ask a question when we read this verse, and that question is simply, how can invisible attributes be clearly seen? That seems kind of like something that's impossible. Verse 20 says, "For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen." But it tells us the answer to that question, being understood through what has been made. Now I'll just give you a for example. I've never seen an atom. Never in my life, and I probably never will see an atom, because it's so incredibly tiny. And since World War II, I know that atoms exist, because I can look in a history book and see photographs of cities that were blown completely off the face of the earth because of what atoms do. Now, I don't understand how this works, but I can sure see that it works. And God's attributes are like that. You can't see God's power. But when you look at creation, you can know that God has power. And this has been true since the beginning of creation. Every person who has ever lived has had an opportunity to know God's attributes, because God made the earth before he made man. So what does man do about this? He sees God's power clearly in creation. Man defeats this principle by taking God out of creation. So man says everything we see has come about through time plus chance and natural processes. Therefore, if God is not the creator, how can we learn about him through creation? Well, if you take God out of creation, you make the Bible a myth, or a lie, if you want to be straight out about it. But man suppresses or holds down the truth. And we can see that God is powerful simply by looking at creation. The whole theory of organic evolution depends on the fact that there is no God. Everything we see came about by random mutation, plus time, plus chance. Now verse 18 says, "For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness. So organic evolution blatantly holds down God's truth. But creation not only proves that God exists, verse 20 says, for since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood through what has been made, so that they are without excuse. His eternal power is a specific attribute of God. And as we look and study the physical universe, we should become more and more aware of God's power. So what does man do? The more he learns, the further and further he gets away from God's truth, his revelation. Now, science is constantly discovering more and more about how complex life is. Chromosomes, genetics, all of that stuff, it's incredibly complex. Now, when Charles Darwin invented the theory of evolution, they didn't know that. Science did not know that. They thought, well, the common man in the street thought, if you took a pile of rags, threw it in the corner, mice would just magically appear out of that. So evolution is illogical, it's irrational, but man suppresses the truth. So we can learn not only that God is, but who God is by observing creation and his divine nature. This is a more generic or non-specific term. It refers to the sum total of God's attributes being understood through what has been made. So creation teaches very clearly that God exists and who God is. Understand is the word na'eo, and that's the verb form of the noun nous, the faculty of intellectual perception, the mind, or the intellect. So we can understand this in our minds. Clearly seen is katharao. And katharao, unmistakable, perceived with the eye of reason, according to Bauer and Gingrich. It really takes a clever mind to ignore all this, but man does. Man is pretty clever. He can take this totally illogical, irrational stand on creation and convince himself that it's true. So the revelation that we have in creation is understandable because it teaches clearly. Since God's attributes are clearly seen, understandable, then man is obligated by creation. Man is surrounded by evidence of God and his attributes. Not only that God exists, but his attributes. Man is surrounded by evidence that God is powerful. Therefore, man has no excuse. Verse 20 says, so that they are without excuse. So this, I found this very helpful when I was studying, because people will come up to you and say, well, what about people who have never heard the gospel? This isn't fair. They do have clear, understandable evidence that God exists, and they have clear, understandable evidence of God's attributes. So does this mean that they are saved if they believe that? You know what? It doesn't matter, because they don't believe it. You know, people come up to you and say, well, what about these poor tribes in Africa that have never heard the gospel message? Well, you know what? They have clear evidence that God exists. They have clear evidence that God is powerful, and they don't even believe that. So they take all the evidence they have and ignore it. They suppress the truth. They will take a tree that was meant to teach them that there is a powerful God, and they cut it down, carve an image on it, and worship the image. They are without excuse. You can't use that excuse. What if he never heard the gospel? Because they don't even believe the evidence that they have. What's man's response to natural revelation? Man has revelation. We've just been over that. He can understand revelation because it is clearly seen and understandable, and man has rejected revelation. Verse 21 says, "For even though they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks, but they became futile in their speculations, and their foolish heart was darkened." So it says, even though they knew God. Now, this is not in the sense of knowing the gospel message. They knew God in the sense of knowing creation. They knew what can be known of God through natural revelation or creation. And they are without excuse because they reject the revelation that they have. So man has real knowledge of God. And what does he do? Well, he denies God's existence. He attacks God's character. And he questions God's actions and his plans. Now, one of the philosophers, and I forget who it was, and the philosopher said that if there is a God, he is the devil. And stop and think about that for a minute. You know, from his standpoint, he's right. He looks around himself. What does he see? Suffering, pain, death, unhappiness. If God came up with this, he's the devil. So he's questioning God's plan. He doesn't take the time to stop and think that all of that came about because of man's sin, not God's plan. They did not honor him as God. To honor God is simply to respond properly to his attributes. For example, God is truth. Therefore, what should we do? Well, we should believe him. This is the appropriate response to God's attribute of truth. Does man do this? No, they ignore him. Man refuses to believe God in the face of all the evidence of creation. Text goes on to say, or give thanks. God is the provider of everything we have. And we can see that in creation. Everything we have, everything we eat, everything we drink, everything we build is all provided by God. Everything created supplies all our needs. Man doesn't even bother to thank God for it. Now, I'll use an illustration. I don't know if I can remember it completely well, but when we moved to Kansas City, Ruth and I, Carissa stayed behind in an apartment, and Carissa doesn't like being alone. So she went out and bought a Siamese fighting fish, a betta, and we thought the results would be in a week a dead betta, but she kept that darn thing alive for a year. And when she came close to the betta tank, bottle, whatever you want to call it, that betta fish immediately went to the surface to get fed. My point here is, even fish in an aquarium know who feeds them. They know where they get their food, and they see that person outside the aquarium, and they immediately come to the surface to get fed. So we're dumber than fish. The result is in 21b. What's the result of all this? 21b says, but they became futile in their speculations and their foolish heart was darkened. So they became futile in their speculations. And futile is mataiao. That means empty in terms of success. So their thoughts became directed towards worthless things. And that's the result of holding down the truth. They became futile in their speculations, or dialogismos. Dialogismos refers to reasoning, the intellect. Now we have to be kind of careful because we think of speculations more of as a guess or something like this. But this refers to reasoning. So their reasoning, they became futile in their reasoning. The forming of a theory or conjecture without firm evidence, as the Apple Dictionary puts speculations. The form of a theory or a conjecture without firm evidence. Did you ever hear a sentence that defines organic evolutionism better than that? They have a theory. They don't have any evidence. So man has become futile in the sphere of his intellect. The word dialogismos is always used in a bad sense in the Bible. It's the mind used in opposition to God. So God gives man creation of his existence and his attributes. Man uses his intellect to give creation a completely different meaning without firm evidence. And their foolish heart was darkened. Verse 21 again, for even though they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks, but they became futile in their speculations and their foolish heart was darkened. And we have to stop and look at the word heart in its the word cardia in Greek, and you may sense the word cardiac coming from that. And in our culture, if we're not doctors, I suppose, we think of this term as the seat of our emotions. I love you with all my heart. Now, the Greeks thought more of their intestines as the seat of their emotions. I love you with all my intestines, including the colon. Greek has a much broader meaning. It refers to the whole inner person. And while it does refer to the emotions, it also refers to the intellect and to the will. So in this context, that word does not simply mean that man became an emotional cripple. It means that man's will was darkened, his intellect was darkened, and his emotions were darkened. Therefore, since his intellect was darkened, he could no longer reason outward from himself. And that's what philosophers try to do. So you could sit down on a stump with a Starbucks karma latte and discover God's plan of salvation. Never in a million years could you figure God's plan of salvation. So what does man do then? Professing to be wise, they became fools. Verse 22, he rejects God's revelation and he has exchanged it for human wisdom. So that is what results in a theory of creation without a God. Professing to be wise, they become fools. Man cannot come up with the right answer apart from revelation, because he has exchanged revelation for human viewpoint. God provides creation to reveal his attributes. Then man worships creation, since his inner man is darkened. Ruth likes to think of Colorado when she sees something like this, because Colorado is such an incredibly beautiful example of God's creation. And yet Colorado is one of the most liberal, disbelieving, holding down the truth states in the whole country. Verse 23 says, and exchange the glory of the incorruptible God for an image in the form of corruptible man and of birds and four-footed animals and crawling creatures. Now, we tend to deify intellect or human viewpoint in our culture, and we put scientists on a pedestal because they are going to solve the problems of the world. Look back at Isaiah 55. Isaiah 55, 8 says, for my thoughts, and this is God speaking, are not your thoughts, nor are your ways my ways, declares the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so my ways are higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. So the most brilliant thinker in the world, the person with the highest IQ and the most numbers of letters after his name, is what? Dr. Fool. He doesn't know anything. God's thoughts are different from man's thought. So even if a man has a doctorate in science of some sort, he is Dr. Fool unless he accepts God's revelation as truth. And I'm going to fall back on my hobby here again. I like to watch old-time science fiction movies. And one of them was The Day the Earth Stood Still. Now, I'm not talking about the new one with Keanu Reeves. That was just stupid. But the old one starred Michael Rennie, and he was a man from outer space. And he said that the people of the other planets and had got together and said Earth was possessor of the atom bomb, and they could pose a problem to the other planets. Now, before that, they just ignored us on Earth because we were so dumb. So what did they do? Well, first, Klaatu, that was his name, he tried to get all the political leaders of all the nations together to tell them what was going on. And they wouldn't do it. But the scientists would. So he got the scientists of the world to get together and understand this terrible consequence of having atom power. So the scientists are who saved us from the aliens that time. Now, most churches today have the same problem. And I'm not talking about aliens, of course. I mean, they get together, they talk about social issues of the day, what the pastor thinks, and backs up with proof text taken out of context. And my view of that is, why on earth would you waste a good Sunday morning to hear what a man thinks? If I say something that is not an exposition of the text, you can turn off your hearing aid. We will see throughout this section that man's attitude is to ignore revelation. And if you reject God's revelation, you have two choices. You can turn to religion, or you can turn to nihilism. And nihilism simply means nothing means anything. You know, you're born, you live, you die, and you cease to exist completely. That's nihilism. Romans 1:23 says, and exchange the glory of the incorruptible God for an image in the form of corruptible man and of birds and four-footed animals and crawling creatures. So religion is a direct result of rejecting God's truth. Now, religion, as I'm using it here, is man trying to do something to win favor with God. Look at Daniel chapter 3, starting at verse 1. Daniel 3:1. This is a perfect example of this. It says, Nebuchadnezzar, the king, made an image of gold, the height of which was 60 cubits and its width 6 cubits. And he set it up on the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. Then Nebuchadnezzar sent out word to assemble the satraps, the prefects, and the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the judges, the magistrate, and all the rulers of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image that Nebuchadnezzar, the king, had set up. So worship of God was replaced by worship of man. That's called anthropomorphism. The word anthropomorphism, in its restricted sense as we have it here, is the representation of deity with the forms of humanity. For example, the Roman emperors declared themselves to be deity, gods on earth. And you know what? This practice is not over yet. 2 Thessalonians 2, 2 Thessalonians 2, verse 3 and 4 says, let no one in any way deceive you, for it will not come unless the apostasy comes first, and the man of lawlessness is revealed, the son of destruction, who opposes and exalts himself above every so-called god or object of worship, so that he takes his seat in the temple of God, displaying his self as being God. So the Antichrist will claim to be God like the Roman emperors. And if you go on in that verse, not only does man worship man, he also worships animals. In the last part of that verse, he exchanged the glory of incorruptible God for image in the form of corruptible man, and of birds and four-footed animals and crawling creatures. Now the Greeks worshipped deities in human form. The Egyptians worshipped animals. The Chaldeans worshipped reptiles. And the Romans were covering all the bases. They had both. And is that applicable to our society? Well, I've heard it said by an animal rights activist that if you see a dog and a boy both drowning, you should save the dog and leave the boy to drown. Now, I don't say they are worshiping animals, but we're moving in that direction, aren't we? So they worship things that are not God. They suppress the truth in unrighteousness. Now, I'll stop there this morning and pick it up next week with verse 24. Father, thank you for your word, and thank you for giving us the incredible blessing of being able to thank you for everything that you provide for us, because you provide everything that we could need or want. In Christ's name, amen.